This is VOA News. I'm David Byrd. Several more witnesses are scheduled to testify on Friday in the second public impeachment hearing concerning U.S. President Donald Trump. We get more from AP's Matt Small.
House lawmakers will hear from Marie Yovanovitch, the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, who was ousted back in May at President Trump's direction. In a closed-door deposition last month, she said there was a concerted campaign against her as Trump and his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, pushed for probes of political opponents, including former Vice President Joe Biden. Democrats have also scheduled a private deposition with a political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Kiev, David Holmes. National Security Council official Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, Trump's European Union Ambassador Gordon Sondland, and Fiona Hill, a former Russia advisor to the White House, are among eight witnesses set to testify next week. Matt Small, Washington.
President Trump has gone to the U.S. Supreme Court trying to block a subpoena for his tax returns filed by a New York prosecutor. We get details from AP's Jackie Quinn.
This appeal to the nation's highest court sets the stage for a historic showdown between President Trump and Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance, who wants Trump's financial records from his accounting firm dating back to 2011 that could include alleged hush money payments to two women who claimed affairs. A three-judge panel of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against President Trump last week, but the president's lawyer argued that Trump, as president, is immune from state criminal law. A second, similar case is also headed to the high court, fighting a House committee subpoena seeking financial information. Of the nine justices on the Supreme Court, two are now Trump appointees. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
For more on these stories and the rest of the day's news, be sure to visit our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Two students were killed and three others wounded in a school shooting outside Los Angeles, California, Thursday. We get details from AP's Ed Donahue.
It happened on the quad at Saugus High School in Santa Clarita.
Multiple shots fired, possibly people down.
L.A. County Sheriff's Captain Kent Wegener says they got a look at the surveillance video, which shows the gunman
withdraw a handgun from his backpack, shoot and wound five people, and then shoot himself in the head.
Students initially thought the gunshots were popped balloons or musical instruments.
I see people running and the campus supervisor screaming for everybody to get out.
L.A. County Supervisor Catherine Barger says there are a lot of questions.
Many people are asking why. That will come with time, but right now our focus is on supporting the community.
This all happened on the gunman's 16th birthday. I'm Ed Donahue.
Hong Kong pro-democracy protesters paralyzed parts of the city for a fourth straight day Thursday. As David Doyle of Reuters reports, they forced schools to close and blocked highways as students built campus barricades.
While the unrest has now lasted for 5 months, it has intensified in the past week after police shot and wounded a protester. Parts of Hong Kong have been paralyzed for four straight days, with protesters torching vehicles and buildings, hurling petrol bombs at police stations and trains, and dropping debris from bridges onto the traffic below. Police said arrows were fired at officers from Hong Kong Polytechnic University on Thursday morning. Speaking in Brazil on Thursday, China's President Xi Jinping said restoring order and stopping violence is the most urgent task for Hong Kong right now.
That's David Doyle of Reuters reporting. The United Nations is a step away from declaring North Korea is possibly guilty of crimes against humanity. We get the details from AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
A key UN panel, the General Assembly's Human Rights Committee, has approved a resolution condemning what it says are gross violations of human rights by North Korea that may constitute crimes against humanity. The resolution was approved by consensus, and the 193-member assembly is all but certain to adopt it in December. North Korea's UN mission says the resolution is based on false testimonials fabricated by a handful of defectors. Among abuses cited in the resolution are torture, rape, and restrictions on freedoms of thought and religion. I'm Mike Gracia.
And the ceasefire announced early Thursday between Israel and the Palestinian militant group Islamic Jihad began to unravel within 24 hours. The Israeli army said it had resumed airstrikes on Gaza early Friday in response to Palestinian rocket attacks. The truce had been reached after 2 days of fighting that left more than 32 Palestinians dead. For more, visit voanews.com. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 15th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe marks second anniversary of the overthrow of Robert Mugabe.
Currently, we are involved ourselves in the law reforms, political reforms, economic reforms, and also electoral reforms.
Kindness Baraza is a Zimbabwe legislator and a member of the ruling ZANU-PF. Rwandan President Kagame warns his critics against destabilizing the country. The Ugandan government is shutting down more than 10,000 NGOs. There is the diplomatic passport scandal in the Gambia. And Kenya and Somalia agreed to amicably settle their maritime dispute.
Over the last couple of months, you know, we have had certain issues that have strained our relationship. But today we have agreed with my brother that there is need for us to ensure we bring normality to our relationship.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and Nigeria's opposition PDP decries a hate speech bill under consideration in the parliament. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Two years ago, today, November 15, 2017, Zimbabweans awoke to the news that the military had overthrown President Robert Mugabe after 37 years in power. Major General Sibusiso Moyo announced on radio that the army had stepped in to pacify a degenerating political, social, and economic situation, which he said, if not addressed, would see Zimbabwe erupting violence. But, as Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports, many Zimbabweans today say not much has changed.
In the 2 years since the infamous military intervention in Zimbabwe, that is still a subject of debate over whether or not it was a coup. Many Zimbabweans are tearing into President Emmerson Mnangagwa's legacy, some arguing the situation was better under former late President Robert Mugabe. Among them is Jeff Chaitezwi, a civic society leader based in Harare.
I can say Mugabe was better than Mnangagwa because Mugabe used to respect some fundamentals, some human rights fundamentals. One, also, he was not that tough than Mnangagwa.
Despite Major General Sibusiso Moyo's televised assurance to the nation on November 2017 that what happened was not a military takeover of government, many in Zimbabwe remain unconvinced, pointing to the appointment of former Army Commander General Constantino Chiwenga as Vice President, as well as incidents like the post-election killing of civilians by soldiers and other restrictions by government. Chaitezwi said Mnangagwa has fallen short of his promise to be better than Mugabe, including improving the economy.
Especially the suppression of essential human rights, the August 1 killings, January uprising, even the suppression of demonstrations.
Begezela Kumbo, an independent political and economic commentator based in Zimbabwe's second largest city, Bulawayo, also argues that the situation has worsened under President Mnangagwa when compared to Mugabe, who ruled the country for 37 years and was forced to resign on the basis that he was failing to lead.
The first is the real GDP growth, which deteriorated during Mnangagwa's time compared during Robert Mugabe's time. We also use the Corruption Perception Index, which has not changed up to today. We can mention many other things. You can talk about the salaries of public servants. You will see that they have been grossly eroded compared to what was there during Robert Mugabe's time.
In response to the barrage of attacks against his leadership and commitment to democracy, Mnangagwa has argued that he has opened democratic space in the country and done his best to grow the economy, which he says is compromised by the targeted sanctions imposed on some ZANU-PF officials by the United States and the European Union. Speaking in Mnangagwa's defense, legislator and member of the ruling ZANU-PF party, Kindness Baraza, said Mnangagwa is doing his best to meet the expectations of his citizens and also the international community.
Currently, we are involved ourselves in the law reforms, political reforms, economic reforms, and also electoral reforms. The president has also put in place a ministerial committee to deal with the recommendations of the Motlanthe Commission report as well as the observer missions reports.
Not many are buying into the rhetoric by Mnangagwa or his colleagues in government or the party that things are getting better, given ongoing strikes by civil servants, including teachers and more currently doctors, who have not shown up for work for more than 2 months due to incapacitation caused by poor salaries and working conditions. Reporting for VOA Zimbabwe Service, I'm Tips Dube in Washington.
Kenya and Somalia have agreed to settle their maritime dispute, which both countries filed in the International Court of Justice. Speaking in Nairobi, Somalia's President Mohamed Farmajo commended the role Kenya has played in the African Union peacekeeping mission in Somalia, also known as AMISOM, as well as Kenya's hospitality towards Somali refugees. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the two leaders spoke Thursday after the conclusion of the International Conference on Population and Development, which had been going on in Nairobi.
Kenya and Somalia yesterday Thursday agreed to normalize the bilateral relations that will see the restoration of the issuance of travel visas on arrival arrangement for citizens of the two states. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta said that restoration of the visa on arrival is aimed at enhancing free movement of people and business between Kenya and Somalia.
So our brothers and sisters from Somalia will be able to obtain their visas at the airport when they arrive. So no more referral visas. We want to encourage our people to do business. We want to encourage our people to come and visit their friends and family.
Kenya had few months ago recalled its special envoy to Somalia and forced the Somalia envoy to Kenya out of the country following maritime unrest that has for long been bringing conflicts between the two countries. Mr. Kenyatta says they have agreed to ensure the citizens of the two states live peacefully.
Unfortunately, over the last couple of months, you know, we have had certain issues that have strained our relationship. But today we have agreed with my brother that there is need for us to ensure we bring normality to our relationship. So we agreed that from now onwards, we must do everything we can, especially as leaders, to ensure that our people live peacefully, they live happily.
Somalia's President Mohamed Farmajo said that Kenya has been at the forefront in ensuring peace prevails in the neighboring Somali state that faces frequent attacks from terror groups.
Of course, Kenya is part of AMISOM, who lost a lot of good men and women in fighting against Al-Shabaab and the terrorist organization. I will assure you their sacrifice will not go in vain. Also, I wanted to thank your government and the people of Kenya for hosting thousands of Somali families who successfully work here, do business, and raise their family peacefully. We always appreciate that.
Kenya is still in conflict with Somalia following the maritime boundary dispute that is currently before the International Court of Justice, as the two leaders agree to mutually resolve the dispute. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame has warned those he says are trying to destabilize his country while hiding behind political and human rights, an apparent reference to opposition leader Victoire Ingabire. But as Eugene Uwimana reports from Kigali, Ingabire says she is saddened that President Kagame is linking her to insecurity in Rwanda.
And for those who are actually involved, they better come clean, so very fast, very fast.
That is Rwandan President Paul Kagame. He's warning people who he says cover themselves with what they call political and human rights activities, while at the same time seeking to destabilize Rwanda.
For people who hide behind this nonsense, and they are even backed and praised by people outside, from outside, you cannot be here benefiting from the peace and security that we have created, that you have paid for in blood over many years, and then you do things behind our backs and cause us problems. We will put you where you belong. There's no question about it.
President Kagame made the comment while presiding over the swearing-in ceremony of new cabinet members that include General Patrick Nyamvumba, the minister of the newly re-established Ministry of Internal Security. President Kagame expressed concerns about what he called internal security threat, and he says his government is going to raise the cost for people who were jailed and pardoned but still continue the activities he calls political games.
People who have been involved with the tragedy of genocide and have continued to play that politics and ideology, and they have gone to prison, then they have come out of prison, and for it we have forgiven them, and then they start playing those games again. We will put you where you belong. And those ones who make noises about it, we will see what they will do.
51-year-old opposition leader Victoire Ingabire is one of those who was jailed by President Kagame and pardoned. In September 2018, Kagame commuted Ingabire's prison sentence. She had been sentenced to 15 years for crimes that included minimizing the genocide perpetrated against the Tutsi. She says, "I don't understand why every time they talk about insecurity, Ingabire is highlighted. I have always said that I condemn democracy by Kalashnikov. I need peace and I support it in my speeches. But what I want is that people have the freedom of expressing their thoughts about their leadership. That is the democracy I want." Ingabire quit her former political party to form a new one called Development and Liberty for All Omurinzi. She says she wanted to depart from her comrades who are in exile. President Paul Kagame's announcement of new security crackdown comes as Rwanda is experiencing several attacks from many rebel groups operating in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 15. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The Ugandan government is shutting down operations of more than 10,000 NGOs for not meeting a one-month registration and validation exercise conducted this year. Internal Affairs Minister Obiega Mario Kanya accused some NGOs of engaging in unscrupulous operations, but some critics say the shutdown is an attempt by President Museveni's government ahead of the much-anticipated 2021 election. Mugumi Davis Wakarinch reports from Kampala.
Uganda's Minister of Internal Affairs, Obiega Mario Kanya, said in a press conference this Wednesday that the registration and validation exercise was aimed at weeding out inactive and unauthentic NGOs operating in the country. Kanya says the exercise will help stamp out what he said are NGOs that are engaged in activities contrary to what they registered for.
All NGOs which do not appear on the validated register should stop operations immediately. Stakeholders, especially the district and sub-county NGO monitoring committees, the Financial Intelligence Authority, Uganda Police, banks, hotels, and other sectors should check the status of any NGO with the register on the website or with the NGO bureau to ensure that such NGOs do not operate in any part of the country.
He said that only 2,100 out of over 14,000 NGOs in the country were found to have valid permits. Richard Sewachiryanga, who heads Uganda National NGOs Forum, a coalition of various NGOs in the country, faults the government for failing some NGOs to register.
We did tell the government that they should have given us ample time for organizations to be able to register, but now they only give 1 month. And this was an internet-based validation exercise and verification exercise in a country where internet doesn't work for more than 20% of the population. So what happened is many people couldn't actually get online.
Over the years, the government and NGOs have had frustrations, with the government accusing some NGOs of supporting the opposition. Sewachiryanga says by shutting down some NGOs, the government will be daunting activities aimed at helping ordinary citizens.
We've been trying to build relationships with the Ministry of Internal Affairs and the minister, and we will continue to do so and also argue that it isn't very helful to go into a discussion around closing or opening. Because all these organizations invest resources, they employ people.
That equals to more than $1 billion. But government officials say they are giving NGOs some extra time to register. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, is calling on its members in the National Assembly to kick against the hate speech bill currently under consideration. The party says it appears the government wants to use what it described as a draconian measure to silence the opposition and critics of the administration. PDP spokesman Kola Olobodinya tells viewers Peter Clotty that the hate speech bill will pave the way for autocratic rule by significantly undermining Nigeria's burgeoning democracy.
We believe in the People's Democratic Party that such a law would be obnoxious. We believe it's undemocratic. We believe that the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, 1999, as amended, has made provisions for punishment for issues bordering on misuse or misapplication or abuse of words. And as such, the new law that is being proposed is to limit free speech. It will be draconian, and it is least expected to be found in any democratic society. And Nigerians have accepted democracy as their way of life. So such an obnoxious rule has no space in our daily life.
But Bakola, supporters of the bill are saying that the hate speech basically will prevent people from abusing their freedom of speech as guaranteed by the Constitution, and that you can't just use the media or create hate speeches to denigrate people, to create tension and an unnecessary division in the Nigerian society. What do you make of it?
If anything, the party in government today was responsible for the level of hate speech we find in our society today or in our country. However, it's important to state that the laws provide for punishment concerning abuses or hate remarks. To create a new law that's obnoxious, that's undemocratic, is an attempt to halt free speech, to demonize free speech. And in any democratic setting, that is totally unacceptable.
Bakola, some people are saying that what the PDP is saying is neither here nor there, because there's a threshold by which hate speeches would have to meet before the law can be applied.
Unfortunately, the proposed law does not in any way express those thresholds. Nigerians will never allow themselves to be ambushed by any government. And as such, we believe that the laws that govern our nation today have made enough provisions on every facet of our lives, including issues bordering on abuse of words or hate remarks. And as such, to create a new law against dissent voices is totally unacceptable.
Kola Olugbodinja is the spokesman for Nigeria's main opposition PDP. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital Abuja. In the Gambia, police are investigating a major diplomatic passport scandal involving some government and non-governmental workers. The passports were sold to Gambian citizens and non-Gambia citizens for financial gains. As Pandere Umbaya reports, a police chief inspector was on Thursday invited to the police headquarters for questioning.
Official corruption has become an epidemic in President Adama Barrow's government, according to critics of the administration. Now Gambian diplomatic passports are being sold for financial gains. The police, who are supposed to maintain law and order, have been named in the scandal. One of its officers, Chief Inspector Boubacar Ba, is currently helping his colleagues in their investigations. Ba has been accused of selling a Gambian diplomatic passport to a Senegalese national. Assistant Superintendent of Police Lamin Jai is the spokesman for the Gambian police.
Recently, the investigators have got new evidences pertaining to Chief Inspector Babukar Bas' involvement into the diplomatic passport scandal, which resulted to him being called in again and his bail condition reviewed, and statements were obtained from him as well.
Ba has been granted bail. He still works with the force.
We understand he has filed a complaint against Chief Inspector Boubacar Ba at the police complaint unit. And upon review of that case, it is understood that the case has to be given the utmost seriousness. And this is why the complaint office has transferred that case to the serious crime unit also to further investigate.
The Senegalese national was falsely portrayed as a protocol officer at the office of the president in his newly issued passport. He allegedly paid Chief Inspector Ba to help him with a diplomatic passport. He says Ba was also supposed to secure him a Canadian visa, which he never fulfilled. ASP Njai again.
For a police officer to be involved in a case related to this is something that we definitely regret, but that will not stop us from applying the law to the latter, because nobody is above the law.
Pa Samba Jau is a Gambian political activist.
It is very unfortunate, very sad, and it, I think, explains the state of our country, where something that is supposed to be as sacred as the diplomatic passport is being, like, used for criminal purposes.
Jau says he has lost faith in the Barrow government. He doesn't stating that the police can conduct an impartial investigation into the matter. Zhou has called on the National Assembly to step in and probe the diplomatic passport scandal. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandurim by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
It's 25 past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with match day one results of the African Cup of Nations Cameroon 2021 qualifiers. Zambia's qualification campaign for the 2021 African Cup of Nations got off to a disappointing start on Thursday night when they were thumped 5-0 by defending champions Algeria at the Mustafa Tacha Stadium in Blinda. In Ghana, the Black Stars got their campaign off to a good start after humbling Bafana Bafana 2-0 at the Cape Coast Stadium also on Thursday. Coach Molefi Nseki suffered his first competitive defeat in charge of Bafana Bafana.
There will be some games where you will prepare well to win and you don't, but at the same time, you have to soldier on and be positive.
In Alexandria, the Pharaohs were held 1-1 by the Harambee Stars at the Borj Arab Stadium in Alexandria in an early evening game, with Mohamed Kariba's goal late in the first half cancelled out midway through the second by Michael Olunga. The result means Comoros are the surprise early leaders of Group G after a goal from Faiz Salmani saw them defeat host Togo 1-0 in a concurrent game in Lome. The Group D match between DR Congo's Leopards and the Panthers of Gabon ended in a goalless stalemate in Kinshasa, while there was a rather more goal-mouth action on show in Bamako as the West African Derby between Group A sides Mali and Guinea ended 2-2. Meanwhile, in Omdurman, Sudan thrashed Sao Tome and Principe 4-0 to storm top of Group C. Gambia came from a goal down to beat Angola 3-1. While in Ouagadougou, Uganda started their campaign with a precious draw away from home after holding host Burkina Faso to a barren draw. In Windhoek, host Namibia beat Chad 2-1 to start off their journey to Cameroon on a winning note. Elsewhere in Cameroon, the Indomitable Lions, who will host the 2021 showpiece, were held to a 0-0 draw by visiting Cape Verde. On Wednesday, Nigeria came from behind to beat Benin Republic 2-1 in Uyo. Garrett Raw is the Super Eagles head coach.
We are happy about this victory. We knew already before the match that it would be very difficult because Benin has one of the best organizations defensively.
Away from the African Cup of Nations for the first time in the history of South African football, and the Premier Soccer League on Thursday declared a record 1 billion rand in revenue, about $67 million for the 2018-2019 financial year. In athletics news, Kenyan marathon world record holder Eliud Kipchoge and Bridget Kosgei have both been nominated for the World Athlete of the Year awards. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. 2 years ago today, November 15, 2017, Zimbabweans awoke to the news that the military had overthrown President Robert Mugabe after 37 years in power. But many Zimbabweans say not much has changed. And that is it for this Friday, November 15 edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hi, I'm Larry London. Don't miss your chance to get the Now 71 CD, including some of the top hit songs of today's biggest stars.
I can't write one song that's not about you. Can't drink with that.
The CD features Billie Eilish as Bad Guy.
So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type. My sister.
Lil Nas X, Old Town Road.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my
and many of the greatest hits. You can only get the chance to win by listening to Border Crossings. Tune us in every day at 1500 UTC.